You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And David, I found myself, I don't know, maybe unjustifiably, maybe not, just getting really, really annoyed over the last few days, over the weekend, sitting down. It's a holiday in the Netherlands at the moment. It's like it's a Pentecostal weekend or something. It's not something I'm familiar with. But anyway, it's a day off today. It's a beautiful day. And the thing is that the bars have opened and the restaurants have opened. So I went across the road. To my local bar. It's called the Food Hallen. It's an old warehouse that's been converted into lots of so-called pop-up restaurants and bars. And I walked in and they said, sorry, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm just going to the bar. You're open today. So no, if you want to go and sit, you can't sit at the bar. The bars are all closed, but you can sit at a table just over there and you're like sitting in the corner, isolated. I said, no, I don't really want to do that. And said, or you don't have to book. You can sit outside at this table here over 20 yards away and also sort of on its own. And I thought to myself, you know what? I'd rather sit at home than do this. This is not what I'm looking for. So if anyone thinks that the economy is going to bounce back and there's going to be, 10, 15 million jobs recreated in the United States of America because of restaurants and bars opening up, if you look at the Dutch example, it's not going to happen. Things have changed, David, dramatically.
Yeah, until we find a vaccine, I think people are going to be very sensitive. And this, who knows how long it's going to continue. But I think people are scared, especially the patrons, the people who own the restaurant are dead scared of either being fined or I don't know what the laws are. And you have to maintain. I wish I could show you a picture. I mean.
Describe it to me.
Let me describe it. There's no criticism here. It's just simply highlighting what you're saying. So King David schools, some schools have gone back, the matrics and I think the standard sevens. And what they had was the playground. And on the playground, they had chairs there that were spaced, I think a meter apart in a square.
Yes.
And kids would sit there. That was their break. They would sit on that chair. They weren't allowed to move or assume they weren't allowed to move or interact with each other. And each day, that's their chair. They'll sit there and that. Now, that is children's breaks. Now, they have to do that. The whole purpose is to get the schooling over, and they have to adhere to very, very strict rules simply because in case a kid, the consequences of a spread. But when you say it's surreal and it's not, I'm not criticizing the school in any way. They're doing what they can.
Yes.
And they're doing what they're expected. But it's quite, all I'm saying is it's a bizarre scene because you know what happens when kids get together at break. They either beat the hell out of each other or kick the hell out of each other. They're playing soccer or doing whatever they are.
Which is running a perfectly normal activity for a young child.
Exactly. And here, forced to sit down in a square and each class probably, I suppose if you've got a whole school, you're going to have a ground for it or an area for each particular class. So it'll be impractical to do so. But, I mean, it's a bizarre scene and quite sad. You know what I mean? It's quite sad to see these poor little kids sitting for 50 minutes eating their sandwiches on a chair, not allowed to go anywhere.
It's unnatural. And I wonder what the fallout will be in the future. And as I've said before, there's Generation X and there's baby boomers and there's millennials. What are we going to call this generation that hasn't been able to go out for 6 months? Because it does affect your intellectual development, I think.
No doubt. No doubt. For young teenagers, this is this is the time that they do develop. Yes, it's only been 3 or 4 months. And they're all getting on with Zoom. My daughter, my granddaughter in New York, met a friend. They kept their distance, but they went for a long walk together, and came back. And that was their playtime, that was their, they communicate all the time through phones and, on social media. But I mean, apart from that, there's not the interaction, There's not the ribbing, the meeting, the playfulness. And I think they're missing out. And I feel desperately sorry for matrics, people who are in matric. Yeah. And in America, this is a graduation time. June is when schools close in 2 weeks' time. This is when you graduate from matric. your yearbook, your prom, and all of these things are such an important part of your life and of your growing up, and it's just bypassed a generation, or certainly not a generation, a year. You know, there's certain kids are not going to have experienced that. So,
it's very sad. Yeah, I got up this morning. I'll just give an example of why I don't think that the leaders know what they're up to. They're obviously human beings, and I don't think that they really know how to behave. And it makes me feel a little bit clever, actually, because I think of prime ministers and presidents and dictators all across the world all have different views of how to handle this crisis, and none of them are, there's no sort of cohesion. And I got on I got up this morning, it's a public holiday in Netherlands. I got up and I got on the tram. They wouldn't let me on the tram because I didn't have a mask. And I said, well, when did this happen? They said, well, it was passed last Friday night at 7 o'clock. You have to have a mask
if you're going
to
out,
on the tram. And I said, well, that's interesting. And then at the same time, at 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock, all the bars opened, but you don't have to have a mask to go into a bar. So I have to have a mask to go on the tram to go to the bar where I'm allowed to take the mask off. They don't know what they're up to, David. I'm actually a little bit despondent about this.
No, I can't think of any leader that's come out on top of this. There really isn't anybody that we can feel proud of how they've handled this crisis. It's been a monumental mess up. And I think we're going to look back in history and just see the confusion that have actually ruled us at the moment. And you can see it. I've got to tell you something. I love the markets, and I've got that's my qualification. I'm glad that they're up.
And me too.
But when you look at the news behind it, I mean, it's astonishing. And it's up, more and more commentators are coming out totally confused and not understanding. You know, even today in the news that we're seeing, the U.S. markets are trading higher, as is the JSE. But I mean, if you think of the United States, what a monumental mess up it is. Just what's happening there. A lot of it is, of course, old issues that are coming, to the top or coming to the surface. But also, I think a huge frustration on behalf of people not knowing what's next. Are they going to get their jobs back or not? I don't, I'm giving my own take on it because I think there's huge uncertainty, and that's manifesting itself in these outcry, these riots.
I do think, David,
like
a lot of people, I mean, Mr. Trump put out a tweet saying 80% of the people that were agitators in Minneapolis and St. Paul, the twin cities, in the first couple of days of the fallout from George Floyd, murdered. I mean, blatantly murdered on air, live television. Well, it wasn't live, but anyway, it was videotaped.
On video,
it's a clean cut case. Nine minutes on his neck. He was a dead man. He was murdered. But I do think people took advantage of that, but it wasn't 80% of people coming in and taking advantage of it. I do believe that what it did was opened old wounds, because there is a history of violence of white policemen on black people in the United States over a couple of decades and even beyond. And you've got COVID-19, you've got unemployment, you've got everything else. So of course it's a powder keg. People will take advantage, but I do think most of the people that started the protests do it with genuine good intent.
I'm not going to argue, but I'm saying it's a whole range of issues that is causing this. You know, is causing the explosions that we're seeing. And the point that I was getting to is that you've got no leader. Mm. You know, you've got a leader who only speaks, who just engenders so much hate amongst everybody. Mm. He doesn't talk for the nation. He talks for his supporters, which are about 40% of the total nation. So who's speaking for the 60%? Who's there? You know, that's the danger of where we are at the moment. There's no one bringing everybody together and trying to solve these issues. It's the complete opposite, and that's what frightens me. And I mean, if you look at you've got a similar incident in UK. I mean, with Boris Johnson over this Dominic Cummings.
Dominic Cummings.
And I mean, he's handled it terribly. It is embarrassing. He's just brushed to the side and saying, "Well, I just pushing it under the table, and too bad." And so he's there. I don't know what's happening in Europe. You know, it seems to be more stable than anything else. But then you've got the China issue as well. And a lot of tensions there. So wherever we look, and I look at the market, say, okay, well, fine.
S&P.
I don't know
again.
What you're seeing. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, well, whatever it is, maybe we're
money.
Reading
See,
this wrong.
That's the thing. I mean, I'm looking at the S&P. It was down 0.75% this morning, maybe 7-8 hours ago. It's now It's now up 0.2%. Nobody cares. The world's largest democracy and the most powerful nation economically in the world is burning. There's 12, 13 cities that have got lockdowns, not coronavirus or COVID-19 lockdowns. They've got, what's the word called? Curfews in place.
Curfews, yeah.
How can you have
that? Well,
they
have to,
I mean, what do you think? I mean, people talk about the S-hole countries in Africa, but we don't have curfews. This is America, and there are curfews. People are not allowed to be on the street after 8 o'clock. It's an absurd situation.
Well, why we say that is that it's hard to reconcile where markets are, that no one cares about it. Gold's barely reacting. You know, everything's just the same. So, Lindsay, maybe we're missing out. Maybe we're too involved. We're too involved or too news conscious. I don't know what it is, but I find it very peculiar. And, you know, listen, from my own point of view, from a personal point of view, and for the clients that I manage,
you're happy.
We're in good shape. We're happy. Good. But I have to look at the news every day, and I have to make decisions. That's the whole thing. I have to make calls. You know, do you understand? You know, every day you say to me, you look at the news and say, should I adjust the compass or should I adjust my, you know, bearings? Do I have to do anything? And it just keeps getting better and better. The FTSE's up 1.25%. I think the CAC is up 1.5%. You know, the European market's up. And I say, okay, we're doing okay. Now, should I do anything? Well, let's wait until tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, worse news comes out and the markets go up. You say, all right, well, let's wait.
As our fellow broadcaster, Nick Kunze, says, whenever we speak to him, he says, just trade what you see on the screen.
Yeah.
Don't worry about Trump. Don't worry about President Xi. Don't worry about riots in Philadelphia or Minnesota or Washington. Just trade what you see on the screen until otherwise advised. And I think that's good advice.
You know, it is good advice. But on the other hand, you've got the opposite. And the opposite comes in some of the results that we're getting today. And I looked at Standard Bank, and I looked at what they had to say. Bidvest came out with similar statements. I look at the absolute pounding that our financial shares have taken.
Yes.
I mean, they've been battered. And then I was talking earlier on to Corky Coyman was on a show with me, and he was a guest, and he was talking.
He used to be Coronation. Where is he now?
He's at Dinka. He was at Sanlam, and he broke away. I mean, it's still owned by Sanlam.
But he used to be Coronation, because I used to phone him up and I'd love to say, this is Cocky Coyman from Coronation. I love the alliteration of the three season
case. I can't remember that period. I remember Newsall, I remember his Sanlam, and I remember Dinka. And it could have been Coronation, Sanlam, Dinka, but he's...
I think he was.
Cookie covers 300 different shares that they look at around the world, and he was talking about financials.
Yeah.
But I listened to him, and he says, you know, literally they're the cheapest they've ever been in terms of wherever you look, in terms of whatever measures you use. And yet I look at our bank shares, and I want to give you, I just want to give you some numbers I took out because I was a bit nervous about it. And I'm saying this is the opposite of what we're talking about. You know, we're talking about markets keep going up. And then you've got the other side where I look at Standard Bank. Now, if you had invested in Standard Bank, and I'm giving total return, okay, because the dividends are quite big in banks. They're quite juicy. And therefore, I have to build them in if I'm looking over 5 years. So I'm not only looking at price, I'm looking at dividends plus share performance.
Okay.
Now, if you bought Standard Bank, you're down 3.7% per annum for the last 5 years. So every year you're losing 3.7.
And inflation was probably 5 to 6% average.
You can put exactly.
So you're 10% in the hole, in other words.
Exactly. So I'm saying if you want to, sometimes I use the dollar, I convert it to dollars to give that kind of measure. So Standard Bank down 3.7. APSA 7.9. Remember, I'm going to say it again. This is with dividends. Mm-hmm. Nedbank minus 11% per annum. So 5 years. Yeah, Capitec's the only one that's come out okay. That's up about 13% per annum. Investec down 9.9%. Yeah. And First Rand minus 0.10. I think you're right, although everyone's arguing in the sense that I think they're going to come under quite a bit of pressure. But they seem to, you know, put a good story across. And the other thing is, and I never talk about Sasfin. I mean, I work there and I'm not involved in management. I just do my own thing.
Your share price, by the way, as you mentioned, Sasfin is up 3.5% on my screen because you've withdrawn your cautionary announcement. You can't tell us about that, of course.
I can. What happens is the share price is up 3.5% after being down about 8% on Friday.
Yes.
So and 11. I don't know what's happened. And I look at it and I say, this is a business that Roland Sassoon started. You know, I mean, many years ago he listed in 1987, yeah. And he worked hard and it's got a good name in the market. It fills a special niche, and you can buy it for $470 million, the whole company. That's what our market cap is.
What's that in dollars? Just work that out in dollars.
Well, divided by you 20. Can do it. I haven't got it. Well, divided by 17 or 18, yeah. So it's $20 million or something. I don't know. Yeah.
Small Maybe. Change, isn't it?
Yeah. It is small change.
But it is a good company, as you quite say. It goes about its business in a dignified way, I think. Mm. It's never going to – you're not going to go to a dinner party and say, by the way, have you heard about Sasfin? But on the other hand, you're not going to go somewhere and say you're going to lose your money in Sasfin because it's always going to be a steady performer.
Mm-hmm. Very. Yeah, and how they're doing that, I have absolutely no idea, and nor am I going to comment. But all I'm pointing out is this is a share price where at 14.50, this, you know, a few years ago, they sold out 25% to Whipphold, and I assume Whipphold, which is an empowerment company, did their own work, and, you know, sold it out at 50 Rand a share, which Whipphold thought was a good price. And, you know, it's now 14.50. I'm just illustrating what's happened over the last few years in this economy and, you know, also in the stock market. So that's the opposite side. So while you're getting tech shares doing their thing and you're getting markets that are very, very strong globally and holding up, you've got this phenomena here where South Africa's been written down to zero.
What you're saying is there's been a wholesale destruction of wealth in certain areas of the JSE Securities Exchange and also the South African economy. There have been some brilliant opportunities, and if you've been clever and put as much as you can legally overseas, then you've done very well. But on the other hand, if you've stuck to your guns like certain certain managers have said, no, I'm going to stick to South Africa, South Africa's going to do well. I'm sorry, you've just lost money. Whether it be inflation-wise, inflation-linked, rand-linked, whatever it is, you have lost a fortune by sticking with South Africa.
Exactly. Absolutely right. Does it come right? I can't make that call because the market's saying no. You know, that's what the market says to me. You know, if we're going to go with Nick's theory, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And say, just trade what's in front of you. This is really, really harsh. And it doesn't apply to Sasfin. I just used it as an example.
I understand.
You know, but if you look at Investec. I mean, Investec's been written down to nothing. You know, it's really the combined value of Investec PLC, Investec Limited, and 91. You know, I don't know what it comes to, 30, 40 billion, you know, from where it was a few years ago.
What was it, 150?
Maybe 120, I don't know, 130 at its day. I don't know what it was. But
maybe this is the opportunity of a lifetime, David.
You know, someone asked me that story this morning, and someone asked a question around that. And I said, you know what I would do? And I'm not a derivative trader. So it's probably worth buying options. You know, take an option, take a call option on banks and take a call option on property shares. That's it, you know. If you want to, you don't have to go and commit yourself and buy the shares. You take an option or buy a warrant, as they used to be, for a few years, whatever it is. I don't know the pricing. And that gives you the gearing if there is outside, you know, if there is upside. If there's not, well, you just write off the cost of the option.
I think you're 6 months ahead of your time, or the person that you were speaking to is 6 months ahead of their time. I always have really, really good ideas. And when I have the good idea, I invest in the good idea. And then a year later, I've lost my money. And then 2 years later, I say to you, look, I told you that was going to happen.
Yeah, but
I think it's a little bit early to do that. But it is going to happen.
I think so.
Eventually.
But that's why I'm doing that. You know, that's why I'm saying I'm not buying the shares. I say, if you feel that absolute urge to do it, then I would buy an option. Maybe you can get the options cheaper here, and they can be very, you know. To be honest, Lindsay, I wouldn't even know where to go. You know what I mean? I wouldn't even know where to go to buy them, or I don't know if we're allowed to.
I can point
to,
you
I
in a
know.
Couple of directions, but
I'd love to, price them. I'd love to price them and look into it and say, okay, I'm prepared to buy some options on these. You know, if I'm going to stay in
index,
South Africa.
The volatility index has gone from 80% down now into the 20s again, and that is what the pricing structure of an option is based upon, how much volatility there is. So you can buy cheap calls and cheap puts at the moment, because when the market goes up, everyone's happy and there's no volatility. It's going up and up and up every single day. But we'll talk about this. Maybe we should have a chat with a derivatives trader one day, you and I.
Well, does Nick know anything? I mean, was
no,
he just
he nothing,
a pretty
no.
boy? Is he a pretty boy?
No, he knows.
Not even pretty?
No, no. Talking about pretty, he's put on 2 stones since he's a blob of a man. He's fatter than me. Sorry, Nick. I know you're listening. Standard Bank came out with a voluntary trading statement for the 6 months, ended 30th of June. Great company, great bank, biggest bank in South Africa, share price down around about 4%. What did you see there? Because to me, it's very simple. A bank takes money from people and then lends it to other people, and you can drive a bus through the buying and the selling.
Ah.
There aren't
but
any
what
people.
What you don't know is they gear it.
Yeah.
So if you put a rand of capital in.
Yes.
Okay. This is where the worry comes. So you put for every 1 rand of capital or deposit they receive, they can lend out 8 times that amount. Okay.
What does that mean? Sorry, explain that.
So if you put $10,000 in a deposit there,
yes,
you know, together with your capital is really the butter, is the margin of safety. So you put 10,000 deposit in, they can lend out 80,000 rand. Okay, they don't lend out 10,000 rand. They can lend out. They gear that.
Who do they use in order to gear it up 8 times? Who do they use? They use another bank or what? What do they?
No. That's the rules. So, of course, you know, that's what they – so, therefore, they've got 8 times the risk. You know, that's why you there's always a danger when there's a run on banks. But you see, because they build up such a huge deposit base that it's unlikely that everybody's going to fail at the same time and so on. But when the companies start failing, that's when the issues are. You know, that's where they have to continually – you know, they have to – bulk up their capital as well, and they measured also on you know, the loans, the loan book, and so on. And what I'm getting at is that they take 8 times the risk of a depositor. You know, so the risks are high in a bank, and they normally well managed, and they manage their books pretty well.
Yes.
But when you get a period like this, this is where it can start to hurt.
Am I being simple, David? Am I being too simple by saying, okay, a bank takes money from people, and if people don't have money, then they can't give money to the bank, and therefore the bank can't loan it out to other people at a bigger margin. And when I see the following statement from Standard Bank today, it says here, shareholders are advised that the outlook for the 12-month period ending 31st of December 2020 continues to deteriorate. In sub-Saharan Africa, the human impact of the COVID-19 pandemic is growing. Standard Bank recognizes the need to flatten the curve, and it puts that in inverted commas. I absolutely no idea why they had to mention flatten the curve. We will continue to prioritize the safety and well-being of our employees, etc., etc. What it's basically saying is the people are not transacting with us, and they're not going to for the next 6 months.
Exactly. That's your danger. Your danger is, and that's where you're right when you say you're 6 months ahead of your time. This could go longer than the market thinks. You know what I mean? We're building in a very short time. What they're saying, no, this could be longer. And therefore, the provisions we have to make against those loans are going to be much greater than you think. You know, we've made provisions for 1 year, but the accounting standards mean that we have to look ahead. And we have to make protection. We have to protect ourselves against that as well. So that's why I think banks are trading at the kind of low levels that they are at the moment. You know, people are projecting forward and very concerned about what they might see this year and the next year and so on.
Yes.
They forecast 8.5% drop in the South African economy. That's huge. You know, for a country that's already in
recession. I think it's conservative, personally, but anyway, go on.
I think so. Mm. I think that Elmer Mulman's views.
Yes.
But I think you're right. You know, I think it's conservative. But it's a worrying, very worrying prospect. So, what do you do? What do you do with Standard Bank? Do you buy them now? That's what I'm saying. I'm not ready yet. If I had to, I'd buy an option. But you're dead right in saying you don't have to do it now. Wait 6 months.
Yeah, don't have to do it. Bidvest came out with a trading update for the 10 months. Mm. Why did they do that? 10 months.
Well, they're the end of June.
April, and trading statement, share price down nearly 5%. Bidvest, you're close to that.
Same thing. Mm. Same thing. You know, they had to write off Comair, so they had to take punishment there. Adcock Ingram is also down, one of their holdings. They have to provide against that. And, of course, their operating companies are SA Inc. That's it.
Any question management there? I mean, I know you've been close to Bidvest and the spin-off. Don't you say to yourself, well, investing in an airline and in Adcock Ingram, it's a great company. I mean, I buy their products. I think I had one of their paracetamols earlier today, actually. But the point is that it's your question management sometimes when it comes to – when you look at the books and you say, Comair has really stuffed you up. Why did you have to get into that company? It's a great company. It's got a long track record. But on the other hand, have a look at the history of airlines. and whether they make money or whether they don't make money. I mean, there's an old story that says the only way to make money out of airlines is to buy property around the airport itself, never mind the airline. Don't you think it was a bit arrogant to get into it?
I don't. Look, they had a very proud history at Comair. They were very well run. But where you're right is that it's oil price. You know, you don't know from one day to the next what the oil price is going to be. That's your biggest expense. And then also you're buying these hefty blooming vehicles, you know, that don't cost a few rand. I mean, and you've got to modernize them all the time. You've got to keep them up to date. You know, what's interesting is if you follow the airline industry, and I like Airbus. I like to follow it. I mean, we've been hurt terribly now because of what's happened to them. But it's
an investor in Airbus, by the way?
I am, and I've held on to them. Okay. I held on to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's a small holding. And when I say a small holding, I'm well diversified. I'm talking for clients, but where we've had it, we're holding on because I think they'll come back. But what's very interesting about that is, you know, they're scrapping the big 380.
The A380,
and the reason it's the A380. It will, and why? And it's a beautiful aircraft, but it's got four engines. It's got four engines, which means that the airlines today want to swap for the more efficient two engines because you chew less gas by that. And also the bodies today are made of carbon fibers and that, the Dreamliner, et cetera, much more efficient. So even though oil prices are low, you save an enormous amount by flying modern aircraft, which allows you to pass on much lower costs or sell your tickets lower. And that's, I know South African Airways is trying to resurrect itself now. There's a whole plan. The government's going to put more money in.
Yeah, really.
You know, and you want to compete today. I know that we will get travel back. It might not be this year. It will come back eventually. But when you do that, if you haven't got a modern fleet, you're out the game. You know, that includes everything. And can you imagine the toilets now, Lindsay?
What do you mean?
Hey,
can I imagine the toilets?
No, I mean in the aircraft, you know, in an aircraft.
Okay.
You can't have those old stinky toilets anymore. You've got to have modern ones that, you know, are properly hygiene. I don't want to criticize the airlines, but they've got to change the whole way.
Mm. I can't, I have to say something. I don't want to get too graphic here, but a day before I go on a long haul flight, I don't eat because I don't want to go to the toilet.
Because you don't want to go to the toilet. Yeah.
I really don't.
I understand that. No. They can't do that anymore. Mm. You know, they can't do anymore. Number one, the space. Yeah. So.
But David, I was shocked. I mean, Air France KLM, which is the biggest European airline after Lufthansa, I think, Air France scrapped their whole A380 fleet. Mm. They announced it 10 days ago. They said, we were going to phase it out from 2022, but because of what's happening now with the complete collapse of air travel, they've scrapped their whole fleet of A380s. Yeah. I mean, these things cost $400 million, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Is that extraordinary?
It is. I don't know who where the carrying cost comes and how they're going to replace it.
Deutsche Bank, hopefully.
But they will go for more economical aircraft and certainly more modern ones. It's not that deep. And can you imagine SAA? You know what we've got?
Oh, you've got things from the 1960s. I mean, these things.
I mean, the 747s. No, those have been scrapped.
Yeah, they were scrapped ages ago. But even the A320s and the A340s, they are so old now. 340.
Yeah. There's a new one that they have to. They have to bring in new aircraft. So I'm saying, if they want to compete, they're going to have to change a whole fleet. And I think it's going to be. I think all the airlines now, as they compete for tourists, are going to have to be a lot more efficient and a lot more, you know, offer completely different hygiene and services.
I'm supposed to go to Greece in September, David. I've won a bet. I've got a free weekend in Greece, and I've got a choice of going to Amsterdam Airport and queuing for 4 hours and getting my temperature taken and all sorts of different things. I've been probed by different medical professionals and everything. Or I can get in a car. It'll take me 3 days to get there, and I get a ferry from the south of Italy down to Greece. And you know what? I think I'll actually go for the route that doesn't involve flying in the air, because I don't trust the airlines. I don't trust that they've maintained their aircraft over the last few months. I'm going to get in a car and I'm going to do it that way. And I think the world of travel has changed as well. I don't know about you.
Well, more and more people are driving now. Yeah. I think in the United States, I've been watching the distributorships and those trading companies, the online trading companies in motor vehicles have been very popular, and people are doing that. You know, they're rather driving somewhere than flying. You know, taking these trips, road trips. A lot of movies have been made about those road trips, but that's what they're doing.
So like trains,
it's a much safer option.
Trains are much more fun. David, let's have a look at what else has happened on the JSE today. We've spoken about a couple of trading updates from notably from Standard Bank. Anything else you've noticed?
We're up today. I mean, we're better, and a lot of it came from China. You know, because Trump didn't do anything dramatic, or so far hasn't sounded off at China. I know China is still a bit of tension because China have withdrawn the purchase of certain farming products. I don't know what comes next. We've been here before, but U.S. markets are still up. We're holding. I'm just trying to look at the top end of our market. Most of those are up, so your Prosus and your Naspers are up on the back of that. And because UK is up, British American Tobacco and AB InBev are all better. The resource shares are doing up, so it's holding us up. But if you go beyond that, banks still under pressure, despite the fact that we think they're incredibly cheap. Investec's lost more ground today. It's down. It's not down a lot dramatically, but it has been under pressure. Standard Bank is down quite significantly. APSA, Nedbank, all taking a bit of strain. Strangely, Capitec is holding up. But, you know, apart from that, it's, I'm just trying to look at the values today because I wonder if there has been any, you know, what the, yeah, 14 billion is nothing. We're at 5 o'clock. 10 to 5, 14 billion. It's nothing.
Well, there's a few holidays around because of the certain religious observances in Europe. I mean, it's a holiday in the Netherlands, for example. So I know. But anyway, the other thing that I just wanted to sort of close on is that I saw this chap on CNN. I watch CNN because they hate Trump, and I'm also not a fan of his. So I sort of lean towards it. But there was a very articulate medical professional on CNN today, and he was saying that he was quite a young chap. He was in his late 40s, early 50s or something. And he said that he's noticed amongst his friends and circles and medical professional circles as well, he had noticed a mild form of psychosis because of the lockdown. And it wasn't people that were previously vulnerable to being put upon by what we're going through. He says it was young professionals, yeah, with kids and everything. Mm. He said he was feeling depressed himself, and people are starting to go, let's put it politely, going a bit mad. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that at all with any of your circle?
I can imagine it's you know, people start to feel it because you're surrounded by, you know who I feel sorry for? There are a couple of chaps that work for me, two young bachelors.
Oh, yeah.
And they've been on their own for 8 weeks.
You mean they can't go out and find partners?
They can't go out, can't do anything. You know, to sit there in by yourself, eventually you have to go mad. You know, what do? You're eating three meals by yourself. You might go and buy something in the shop that you're out in. I bumped into on Saturday morning. I was running and I saw a couple there, and the chap was, you know, obviously finished his training. And I said, "Oh, you're a personal trainer." He says, "No, this is the only way we can meet. They won't allow my girlfriend into my complex.
Oh.
You know, they won't allow her in. So when I go running, we run together. You know, we go for a run together. That's our relationship. And then when they finish exercise, say goodbye, and that's it. You know, and that's." It's got to tell on you. I mean, after a week or two, it's fine. But after a long time, I mean, it does play on you. I'm holding my sanity there just about.
Yeah, because you've been through it all before. You've been through world wars and cold wars, world wars. But no, but I'm serious. This chap genuinely said that he was getting depressed himself. He was worried about the future of his children. And he says that in his practice, he saw people that were showing signs of psychosis, which I think is quite disturbing for future generations.
Yeah.
I know I'm going
mad. No, of course.
Anyway, David, thank you very much for your analysis, the extended analysis. That's David Shapiro. He's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.